The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.
All rise.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot-button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Good morning, and this is Bennett Kelly with the Internet Law Center here in sunny Santa Monica. Please be seated. Welcome to our 43rd and final show of 2011. It's been a fun ride, and I hope you enjoy this last hour we have together for 2011. We're going to talk about a lot of things that happened in the past year, why they're important, and what they mean for 2012. We're also going to go over some tips for what you should be thinking about now in preparing for the new year. But we start with some breaking news and some sad news. Unfortunately, it's been released on the wire that Cheetah, the chimp from the 1930s Tarzan movies, has died at the age of 80. Apparently, he outlived all of his co-stars. And he had been living in, first of all, he lived with Tarzan for quite a number of years. And it seems like he's having a revival. He lived with Tarzan for a number of years, Johnny Weissmuller. And then upon his death, he went to, retiree, went to Florida where he stayed in a sanctuary there and has passed away due to kidney failure at the age of 80. No word about some of the other famous monkeys we know of or chimps. I was trying to find out whether Bonzo of Beton the Bonzo fame also survived his famous co-star, but I have not got confirmation one way or the other whether Bonzo is still with us enjoying bedtimes or not. Any comment, Brasco? I know this is a tough day for you.
A tough day for me, really?
Anyway,
I'm not one for monkeys or chimpanzees. No,
you're not. No, what is your favorite movie animal?
I'd have to come back to you about that. I would waste the whole hour.
Okay.
I'll give you one at the end of the show. How about that?
Invoking the mercy rule. we're going to start off with a couple of announcements. Today is also significant for a couple of reasons. One is today is the birthday of one of our guests and my former co-counsel, Brian Bennen Haley, the Pride of South Carolina, and he's enjoying his birthday at home with his family and his wife and kids in South Carolina. Happy birthday to you, Brian. I hope you're listening. We've been having a bit of a debate over the recent decision by the Justice Department to invalidate South Carolina's new voter registration law. South Carolina is one of the several southern states that remain subject to the Voting Rights Act of 1964 and have their voting laws reviewed by the Justice Department, which just recently invalidated a recent change in their voter identification law. Also, here's one for you, Brasco. Today's also a notable birthday. Someone significant turns 30, and that is the test tube baby is 30 years old today.
All right.
So mix a drink in a vial of your choice and toast to her wherever she may be. But anyway, we're going to start by talking about some of the top stories of 2011 and particularly why they were important and going forward what they mean to us. And one of the top stories for 2011 has to be the Amazon tax. And it's been a major focus of this show. We've had a number of episodes as we watched the tax proposals advance at the start of the year in Illinois. And then California, And now, lately in the year in Pennsylvania, where we had the stealth enactment of the Amazon tax via press release by the Department of Revenue, a move which I still find astoundingly shocking, and also I'm astounded by the lack of outrage over it as well. But maybe I'm just not hearing what's going on the ground in Harrisburg. But which, by the way, Brasco, I'm an honorary citizen in Harrisburg, one of the only city in which I am. But any event, that is a significant story. What's also happened was Amazon during the year made a number of deals with states such as South Carolina and others to avoid sales tax collection by locating facilities there in response to favorable treatment tax-wise. And that itself has become subject to constitutional challenge, and that may unwind. But what is interesting, though, is that the Amazon tax movement has reached a critical mass. And I always thought that at a certain point, it would become uneconomical for online retailers to more or less say, I'm going to keep, you know, just cutting off my limb and, you know, cut off my access to this state and then that state. And at a certain point, it wouldn't be feasible for them. And now that we have states such as New York, Pennsylvania, Illinois, California, which are some of the largest states in the union, North Carolina as well, population-wise, it getting to that point where it actually – it may no longer be economically viable, or we may be soon at that point, which may explain why Amazon has now adopted a new strategy. And that's why the Amazon tax in 2012 is actually the focus may not be in the various state capitals, although there will be certainly activity in a number of states. The focus of the Amazon tax in 2012 may be Congress, because Amazon has now joined a number of other groups in calling for a federal solution, which is actually not exactly the proper way to phrase it. It's actually a congressional solution that allows states and clarifies states' authority to collect sales tax and creates a uniform system. And so it's commonly known as the Main Street Fairness Act. And so as that process evolves, what we may see is a change in the focus of the debate to Washington. And as you may recall, Rebecca Madigan on our show explained that we were kind of in a weird dynamic here, in that intuitively it seems like this would be, basically have about a snowball's chance in July on Capitol Hill, given the strong anti-tax sentiment that exists. But it really isn't being considered a tax. It's really not collecting anything new. It's just clarifying states' authorities to collect a tax that they've already imposed. And so that respect, it may be getting around the hurdle of Grover Norquist, whose group has been neutral on the issue to date, and apparently other tax groups as well. And so it creates a unique situation where, something that might intuitively seem to be absolutely without a prayer in Washington may actually happen in 2012. And so I think that's going to be a major thing to look at. There's definitely a lot of resources behind it. God knows Amazon is one of the major internet players on Capitol Hill in terms of spending and lobbying. And as well as in their own Washington field staff. In addition, you have the brick-and-mortar retailers who are also behind it, who want to level the playing field. In fact, one of Amazon's biggest opponents at the state level has been Walmart. And so here you would have Walmart and Amazon, along with various small business groups, all in favor of a tax. And so this actually is something I think affiliates should welcome. It no longer makes them the punching bag of the result of this feud between Amazon and Walmart and, Main Street retailers. And so it could be a very positive development. It also could be, you know, a rash of, you know, policy-wise, a sound development. You know, what it seems to be like, that would be a more rational way to collect sales tax than have it this haphazard, you know, everyone going for the Amazon lottery and seeing who can go through the gauntlet and survive. It'd be interesting to see while this is going on whether any states actually repeal the Amazon tax, because there have been discussions of it in Illinois, in Rhode Island as well, and that so far, with a few exceptions, the Amazon tax has not realized much revenue. So definitely a major story for 2011, and one that we know we're going to be continuing to talk about in 2012. I want to thank all our guests on that issue who appeared on the show. Rebecca Madigan and her team have been on several times, and as well as we had Mr. Schaefer on some of our earlier shows, who actually was successful in challenging the Colorado Amazon-ish type law, and got found out he had won his motion for an injunction only moments after appearing on one of our earlier shows. So Mark Schaefer, I want to thank you as well. And as well as we've had people from the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities provided their input and in explaining what was driving the Amazon tax movement. And that was just a crushing need for revenue. The states were under a very severe fiscal crunch caused by the recession and in the housing crisis, and just a confluence of almost a perfect storm of fiscal disaster was occurring at the state level, which really drove, I think, a lot of the need to find revenue, albeit Amazon being an easy one to do because it's of its gimmicky nature. It's not really imposing any new tax on anyone. And to the extent that politically it's hurting anyone, it's hurting someone out of state. And so I think that was driving this to a large degree. Now, another issue that was very prominent in the past year. One second, I just want to take a look at the chat board. Okay. I don't know about China's hard landing, but we'll see about that. Just responding to the comment on the chat board. But another hot issue, I think, in the new year is going to be piracy. And we've already seen online piracy, copyright infringement, and already just whatever phrase you choose is somewhat reflective of where you stand on the issue. As we had on our recent show, we had there's a big fight going on between Hollywood and, you know, content providers and basically the rest of the internet. And there was a big skirmish played out over the holidays with GoDaddy. GoDaddy, which actually became famous through its, teasingly audacious ads featuring a former Playboy model testifying before Congress and the whole promoting free speech, found it in a weird position where it was actually on the wrong side of the issue. And we saw a mass movement to boycott GoDaddy, and they lost a number of domain names registrations. As a result, thousands of people pulled out from GoDaddy, and you saw an immediate reversal. GoDaddy switched gears and now is opposing SOPA, the Stop Online Piracy Act, as it's been called. And you're seeing a different shift, and there really was a tidal shift that caught the entire large part of the internet community from the backbones, as we heard David Snead talk about, as well as major websites, Google, a lot of technology, policy people. You saw a big movement of the tech community against the bill. And at the same time, you also saw a movement of both left and right opposing the bill as it being an overreach. There is a lot at stake in this bill. One, a bad bill could be disastrous for the internet. It could also be disastrous for civil liberties. And so, but there's also a lot of money on this bill. The entertainment community has fought long and hard. This is their second attempt in two Congresses to get this done. And so they're going to want this completed. So expect this to be a top fight for 2012 on the internet. To the extent that net neutrality was the fight in Congress on the internet in 2011, this will be the internet fight for 2012. And
you know, it's funny, Bennett, you mentioned how this is going to be a really big story. I don't know if I just put a link into the chat room real quick about how Lamar Smith, the congressman, responds to the SOPA complaints. I don't know if you saw this at all.
I did not see the link, but I know that he is getting a lot of flack for how he has handled this. You may recall we had Congressman Rohrabacher on in response to the patent reform bill, and that was something that was drafted by Lamar Smith. And it was kind of he was criticized heavily for overreach in that. And Lamar Smith is also being criticized here for overreach. He thought he had a slam dunk. He thought he could just roll this up and set Google up as the internet bad guy, and they were going to just roll Google. There's a strong antipathy towards Google within the Republican caucus in the House, and surprisingly, some Republicans said no. You can't make Google a pinata on this issue. There actually is some substance to the criticism. And so that's really a big issue in terms of how he approached it. He's also being criticized at home in Texas politically because he was behind a redistricting plan that got overturned as well. So he's definitely in the hot seat and now wants to redeem himself. And there's a lot of money on the line here. Now, let's talk a little bit about the merits of the issue. I don't think anyone who's for or against SOPA is for piracy. I think everyone's against piracy. The question is what measures should you employ to prevent it? And as we had David Snead explain, there's just a bit of overreach going on here and just broad discretion of the government to just classify a site as supporting piracy and then allowing it to just be shut down. It could create a lot of legitimate sites potentially could be shut down as a result. And so the problem with the law is that it's a blunt instrument. So you have to be careful to, when you craft a law, to make sure that it can't be abused. And, that's what people like me get paid, the bucks for, to figure out how we can, use the tools that Congress may have unwittingly given us. And so if you think there's a potential for abuse, even if you don't see it, it's there. So I think that is the issue that's what's going on. This isn't really about, should Hollywood or should the record companies be allowed to, protect and stop piracy. I think everyone recognizes that needs to be done. And also there's some concerns about the link between piracy and organized crime, piracy and even terrorism. So although I think, it's uncertain to what degree that exists. So there was a question in the chat room about whether it is unconsciously overbroad right now. The bill as written, I believe, is an overreach. And there's a question about whether it would be considered overbroad. I think Congress is allowed to delegate. Yes. And the bill as it is drafted now, referring to SOPA, not referring to the Wyden reform compromise bill. Congress is allowed to delegate certain authority to the executive, but in doing so, it has to provide clear guidance. You can't just give too much authority to executive. In addition, there's constitutional restraints on the use of executive power, and one of them being the Fourth Amendment. You can't be subject to reasonable search and seizure or deprived of lost liberty, without reasonable. Without due process of law. And so You have the 4th and 14th Amendment coming into issue. And so all these things are important. And so that's what's going on here. Now, it's easy for the record companies. They have the money, and they want to make this as simple as possible, make this about are you for piracy or not. But it's interesting to see. And Sweden tried to take a hard line on this about 4 years ago or 3 years ago. And the result was the public responded, and the Piracy Party became the second largest party in Sweden the next year. And so this is going to be a hot issue. I'm glad to see there's a lot of opinions on this on the chat room. And we're going to be talking about this a lot in the next coming year. But first, we're going to take a break.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Celebrating the best in online advertising, the Web Marketing Association presents the 2012 Internet Advertising Competition Awards. Submit your banner ads, email ads, rich media, online newsletters, websites, and social media campaigns now by going to www.iacaward.org. Deadline for entries is January 31st, 2012. Be honored among your online advertising peers by submitting your entry today into the Web Marketing Association's 2012 IAC Awards. Go to www.iacaward.org now.
As you know, being an expert at
What did she say?
Requires lots of practice and a great tool. Think you could use some help with
Whoa!
You're not alone. Hundreds have used our tool to take their performance to the next level.
The language!
Of course, we're talking about managing Facebook ads on Acquisio.
Oh.
Buy, track, manage, optimize, and report on media across all major ad networks. Visit Acquisio.com to get a demo today. Acquisio. Search, social, display, one platform.
Superior affiliate offers, superior affiliate brands, superior affiliate service, the superior affiliate management. Superior Affiliate Management delivers direct, exclusive offers with weekly payouts. Their mission is to ignite your e-commerce and ignite your commissions. Superior Affiliate Brands means our work with the internet retailers top 500, as well as new brands, thanks to their full-service agency and CPA network. Superior Affiliate Service means lifetime bonus referrals and personal VIP treatment. When you hear Superior Affiliate Offers, Superior Affiliate Brands, Superior Affiliate Service, that's SAMOPM.com.
This is Maria Retan, host of Purse Strings, wishing you and yours a warm and happy holiday season and a very festive new year. Hope that business is good and you continue to market to moms because she's going to drive your bottom line.
From all of us to all of you, WebmasterRadio.fm, wishing you happy holidays and a prosperous new year.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back. And just very briefly on SOPA, there's a group known as TechDent, which is a coalition of technology companies and internet companies, which was formed in, after the dot-com bust. And they're a respected voice when it comes to internet and technology issues, from a business point of view. And their view on TechNet, they wrote to Chairman Smith, and they expressed the following concerns. They thought that the law created a private right of action, which is a right to sue against lawful U.S. companies. SOPA allows copyright and trademark owners to take action against law-abiding payment processors and advertising companies to compel them to take action against activity on the basis of bare allegations. And here's the problem. Once you start that process, Basically, no one wants a lawsuit. People will take measures to avoid lawsuits. And that would mean companies would just not deal with certain types of they wouldn't host or they wouldn't advertise with certain types of companies because they didn't want the headache of a lawsuit. And so without even with only one or two lawsuits, you could have the effect of shutting down hundreds of sites just because of the ramifications of what happens after. SOPA may subject U.S. internet companies and financial firms to technology mandates, as courts may require companies to take certain actions based on lawsuits brought about by the new private action. It exposes U.S. firms to significant commercial harm without due process, as firms may have strong incentives under SOPA to stop doing business with sites that are targeted by unproven allegations. And that's as I mentioned earlier. In addition, they mentioned that the legislation creates new statutory standards of infringement, which could expose existing and startup firms in areas such as social media and cloud computing to new litigation and liabilities. And then finally, it undermines efforts to keep cyberspace secure by requiring technological approaches to block access to sites engaging in unlawful acts that facilitate piracy. Illegal sites registered in the U.S. will be blocked under SOPA, but this would encourage such sites to locate overseas where nations' recent efforts to improve web securities do not apply. So those are just some of the concerns raised, but a big part is the whole due process issue that we've discussed a little bit earlier and that has been raised on the chat room. But moving along, one other issue, a couple of quickly some of the other top stories this year. One was Righthaven, and we've covered that quite extensively. And I think everyone loves a come up in sort of story such as this. And it was great having Mark Randazzo on the show last week to talk about his efforts to put the final nails in Righthaven. And I note that the domain Righthaven is actually up for auction. So anyone who in the show who wants to put up a bid, I'll throw in a buck and help you out there. But any event, that is, I don't think we're gonna. We may have seen the last of Righthaven, but I don't know if we've seen the last of that model. Another issue we covered extensively on this show was the Match.com date rape story, and then you may recall there was a woman who was raped. By someone she met through Match.com, even though guy had 3 rape convictions. And she alleged that Match.com should have had a duty, really, to protect its customers and do something that was minimally difficult and just do a match its members against registered sex offenders. And we had the lawyer on first after the Mark Webb, after the lawsuit was filed, and then afterwards to crow a little bit about his victory. And it was interesting, how Match.com's position changed dramatically. First, it took the position that it was just administratively impossible for it to do such an effort such as that. And then once the victim – the suit was initially filed as a John Doe suit. And once the victim actually stepped forward and appeared on Good Morning America, all of a sudden it was quite possible to do this. In fact, do it quite promptly, and that's ultimately what was achieved. And so congratulations again to Mark Webb for a job well done, and I'm glad that they're able to resolve that suit quickly. Brasco, you have a answer on the animals.
Yeah, so earlier you were asking what were my favorite animals that I've seen in movies. I can give you for movies and for TV. For movies, if you remember a movie from the 90s called K-9, it was with Jim Belushi.
Oh, yes, very well.
So the dog's name was Jerry Lee. That I thought was a pretty good animal for a movie.
Okay.
And for television, I need to go back to Magnum P.I. and the dogs that Higgins used to take care of, Zeus and Apollo.
I don't remember them. I do remember K-9 and also Tournament of Hooch, which also came out around the same time.
They were two twin black Dobermans. They were fantastic, And you hear Higgins coming across, Zeus, Apollo. And, the whole, very cockney, very, snobbish English accent. That was Higgins. It was quite interesting.
Well, I once had the pleasure of sitting across from Jim Belushi while he was chowing on a burger and watching the food fly across the table. So I think any pairing of him with a dog is a good pairing. But I actually have an odd story involving Jim Belushi. I was at a screening of the Getty the Getty Art Museum out here in Los Angeles, which is now a major tourist destination, huge multi-million-dollar museum up on the hills overlooking Malibu and all of LA. It's really a beautiful destination. A little weak on the art, but it's a great location. And I was at a screening party for it, for travel writers. And I got there and they didn't have my name tag ready. So they flipped over someone else's name tag and put my name down. And so I was curious who it was. And it turns out it was Dan Aykroyd. Apparently he wasn't attending. So I actually flipped it back over and it was Dan Aykroyd. And so I wore it throughout the rest of the party, and the Getty Center has free parking in it, but you have to go in. The parking garage is huge, and then these huge elevators that hold about 100 people. And so at the end of the event, we're all in the elevator together, and I was about to get busted on something with my date. And just at that opportune moment, the elevators opened up, and a whole bunch of people pour out. You can imagine an elevator, 100 people. Everyone's bumping around like pinballs. And this guy bumps me and looks down. And he goes, "Dan." And I look up, and it was Jim Belushi. And I said, "Jim, how you doing?" And he says, "Let's get together. Let's do lunch sometime." And everyone was laughing, and I was completely off the hook with my date. And that's the joys of being Dan Aykroyd for an evening. So any event, back to cyber law, now that we've had our Jim Belushi detour. One other issue we covered a lot and in fair detail was net neutrality. We've had several speakers on, and I think that was the big fight in Congress on the internet was this year, was net neutrality. Because it was, from the congressional Republican viewpoint, it was a way to attack Obama on technology. And which I found to be a strange position, because the FCC, in pushing forward on net neutrality, what it was doing was following a policy adopted by its predecessors, both the initial net neutrality guidelines, which were adopted by Chairman Powell, Colin Powell's son, who was the first FCC commissioner under Bush, and then Chairman Martin, who actually was quite aggressive in trying to enforce them against ComSat, and only to have the court say, well, they weren't enforceable. You need to actually go through rulemaking process. And so then when they go through the rulemaking process, basically what the FCC was doing was really trying to formalize that which the Bush administration had already implemented. But if you listen to people's voices on Capitol Hill, it was Obama taking over the internet. It was, it was creeping socialism, communism, you name it. And frankly, I think it was just a lot of hogwash. I think it was just people trying to distort the issue for political gain. And it really, there's no merit there. I think a lot of what we're hearing is just sound bites and without substance. You can debate whether or not having a net neutrality is needed, but I think the presence or absence of net neutrality is not taking over the internet, because it's quite the opposite. Net neutrality is about making sure corporations don't create roadblocks and toll booths on the internet. In fact, as this was being debated, we saw some of the things that had been warned about during the early days of net neutrality starting to occur. You started having metered billing. You started having tiered pricing for internet access. And some of the abuses that we'd heard about before started to occur. Things, concerns that things were being taken down because of their content. Certain politically objectionable views were being taken down. Or in one case, there was one provider that discriminated against applications in favor of its own. And so I think this net neutrality, there's a sound reason for it. And it has nothing to do with taking over the internet. Net neutrality is actually about making sure the internet stays free. And all it is government saying, you know, just don't discriminate. It's not a government imposing anything on anyone. And so, in any event, that was a big story. This story is not over. I'm sure there's going to be further litigation. This issue is on appeal, and we will hear more about it in 2012 as this goes before the D.C. Circuit, which has already once ruled against the FCC on this. But it goes to the question of not whether or not the FCC has the statutory authority to issue the regulations at issue. So that will be coming back to us for sure in the new year. A couple other issues quickly. I think the Twitter revolution is a very big issue. And you may recall our second or third show, we had someone on from the Berkman Center to talk about our progress there. And interestingly enough, and I'm sure you may recall that that was going on while we had that show right in the heat of the Egyptian protests. And only days after our broadcast, Chairman Mubarak stepped down, no doubt, in light of our show. I think what we're going to see that continued is, in the various protests, across, we're having it in Syria now and across the U.S. with the Occupy Wall Street movement. But there's another aspect we're going to see. The second aspect of this is that as countries try to block demonstrations in their countries, we noticed that they were using U.S. technology to do that. And so they were using U.S.-based software to shut down the internet, to monitor and suppress the internet. And so that will be an issue in the new year, because internet monitoring software is going to be an issue in Congress, and the ability to export this type of software to repressive regimes is going to be an issue in Congress in the new year. And several congressmen have brought it up, and so I don't know if they're newly enacted, but I think there'll be increased pressure on those who provide that technology. But whether or not that's ultimately successful or not, it's just going to become a more dicey area to do business in. And hopefully that pressure may prevent people from doing business with dictatorial regimes. Although, as we saw in this last year, those regimes are becoming fewer in number, thankfully. Another issue that was very big is the area of privacy and do not track. And I've espoused my view on this somewhat, in that I believe that this is an issue that's just going to take time to percolate. And it's not something that was going to wrap up quickly. Because of the diverse nature of interest involved, because of the complexity of it, because of the fact that it's a moving target, and I honestly don't think the regulators actually have their arms fully around it. I just don't know where this will end up this year. At best, I think maybe you might have a small privacy bill, maybe something limited, do not track level. But even then, there's a lot of complexities involved, and how different browsers approach the issues, and how do you define track, and what is permitted, what is not. I think the fact that the FTC has applauded recent self-regulatory efforts in that regard may suggest a backing off, but that could be a misreading. But privacy has been a very important issue, and it's also become part of another big issue, which is it's a company that deserves its own issue, and that is Facebook. Facebook is a big story. They have a consent decree with the FTC, which some don't think goes far enough. But obviously the fact that they're going to be subject to review for 20 years is pretty significant. They recently entered a settlement, or actually I shouldn't say a settlement, but they were recently given a good bill of health by the Irish privacy commissioner, who found that more or less that they were consistent with European privacy guidelines, although they did announce that they were going to be taking certain measures in response, nonetheless. They committed to implementing improvements regarding practices such as providing additional notifications about Facebook's photo tag suggest feature so that they can decide whether or not to use the feature to help people tag them in photos, and as well as change policies on deletion and retention of data. And so what's amazing, though, is Facebook has become such a dominant force in terms of the amount of time spent online. It is the number one internet destination in the world. And so, you know, the fact that in a world as diverse as ours, to have 55% of the world's global audience on Facebook, and it accounted for 1 in every 7 minutes spent online around the world. I mean, that's just remarkable. And if you watch the Facebook movie, all because of someone was mad at his girlfriend, or actually she wasn't his girlfriend. He wasn't making any success. All this led to this remarkable event. We also have another birthday to make note of. Stan Lee is 89 today, and he was the creator of Spider-Man. Spider-Man actually was in the news this year. They had a not-so-successful Broadway run, I believe, controversial in its firing of Julie Taymor, who was rose to fame with her production of The Lion King. But any event, this is not a Broadway show. Another big issue in this year has been – I think we've almost covered it. The last issue I want to cover is online gambling. And I refer to this as the fall and rise of online gambling. In the middle of the year, the Justice Department cracked down on a number of online gambling sites that remained, you know, some of the Full Tilt Poker and some of the others, finding that they were violating the law, existing gambling laws, and they were also engaged in racketeering. And in fact, one of the founders of one of the sites has pleaded guilty, or at least admitted to wrongdoing in that case. But what happened over the holidays was remarkable. The Justice Department, which has been taking a very hard line on online gambling, at one point going so far as to write letters to the National Association of Broadcasters to warn them that accepting ads for online gambling would be making them an accessory to the crime, and that they could potentially be prosecuted. In fact, Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, Sporting News, a number of major media organizations paid substantial fines to the Justice Department as a result in settlement. So given that background, it's surprising that the Justice Department released a new opinion letter in response to requests from Illinois and New York for clarification of the Justice Department's view on whether or not states could properly run online lottery sales, and provided it was for intrastate sales. And keep in mind that we live in a federal society, and so Congress can regulate interstate commerce, but there are some limits on interstate commerce that are predominantly the province of the state. What we saw was a remarkable reversal, in that the Justice Department now takes the position that states can properly have online lottery sales, which could also lead to more than just lottery, but we could have states with online poker and online other, you know, gambling devices. And it's a remarkable development, and actually could take some of the pressure off on the Amazon tax, because here is a potential new source of revenue. Interestingly enough, this is being pushed by New York, which was where the Amazon tax began, and Illinois, but already a number of states, Nevada, I know California is looking at, District of Columbia. This could be, in the next few years, you could see almost all states having some form of online gambling. So it raises an interesting issue. There's a strong anti-gambling component of the Republican caucus in Congress. they're very kind of the moral, you know, conservative aspect of it, and they may try to take some efforts to block or reverse this opinion. And so I haven't really got an indication of where they're coming out on that, but that this issue is not dead. So we're going to take our last break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what you need to do to prepare yourself for 2012. Back after these messages.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
From the creators of We Build Pages, experience the power of the Internet Marketing Ninja. An exclusively trained army of nearly 100 in-house ninjas. Mastered in the arts of social media, local marketing, content creation, SEO reporting, and yes, link building. The Internet Marketing Ninjas will release a new version of their legendary tools to the public. Visit imninjas.com. The ninjas are coming.
In 500 yards, CPA Way will be on your right. You have reached your destination.
On the interstate of internet marketing, CPA Way helps you monetize the way. No matter which direction you're heading, CPA Way is your route to low-risk revenue. Advertisers, we have paved the way to delivering revenue channels that will meet and exceed your expectations. Publishers, we monitor and manage your campaigns to bring you the most revenue possible. Publishers can feel secure to leverage direct offers, while advertisers can find safety offering their most valued campaigns. The road to trust, respect, integrity, and honor is just ahead at CPAway.com.
Looking for a white label SEO and social platform for your clients? Think
eBrands.
Free and unlimited SEO audit reports.
eBrands.
Premium Facebook apps and welcome page creators.
eBrands.
Twitter management app, analytics, and mobile site generators.
eBrands.
Let eBrands manage your search and social media campaigns and give you and your clients access to their white label dashboard, which have great reports that will wow your clients and deliver great ROI and results. Try eBrands for 30 days. Go to eBrandsWithAZ.com or call 1-866-625-5717. That's eBrands with a Z for
eBrands.
Happy holidays, everyone, from the Life Tips Show here. Hope you tune into our show this coming year. Remember, chips do not make good pets. Stay away from yellow snow. And an escalator can never break. It can only become a set of stairs. Happy holidays, everyone.
From all of us to all of you, WebmasterRadio.fm, wishing you happy holidays and a prosperous new year.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back for our final segment of the year. And very briefly, a few things you want to consider as you, you know, prepare your business and yourself for 2012. One is to update yourself on what are the new laws that go into effect. In California, a number of states, new laws go into effect on January 1. And so you should be aware of what new laws are going into effect where you live. A great source of information is usually your state chamber of commerce. For example, California, the Chamber of Commerce provides an overview of new 2012 laws affecting employers. And you should check to see what the applicable laws are in your state. Definitely check the Chamber of Commerce website where you are. In addition, the Chamber of Commerce also provides updated posters for your and include in your workroom for so you ensure that you're compliant with all the various updated state labor and federal labor regulations. And those have changed. You have a new National Labor Relations Board and Labor Department under the Obama administration that is a little more aggressive than the Bush administration had been. So there are new rules that you may want to be aware about. The second thing to do is to look at all your standard contracts and your templates from your privacy policies to your you know, your NDAs and your contracts. And the first thing to do is ask yourself, well, what went wrong? What did I learn from anything that happened the last year? Is there anything I want to try to prevent from happening? And make sure that's right. You try to reflect that in your agreements and your templates. The second thing to do is once you update your template, do it in either a different font, use a different heading, do something so that it is visibly different, so that you can tell without even having to read the document, just by walking by one of your associates' desk, whether or not they have the right document or not. Related to that, you want to make sure that when you release the new, your new contracts and your new policies, that you collect the old ones. You don't want them laying around. You don't want them being used. And then, so to the extent you're dealing electronically, you want to make sure your employers are deleting, employees are deleting the old contracts and not sending out old language. That's an important thing. You only hold milk for so long, and a contract is only good for so long. So it's worth it, you know, the time, if it means hiring someone like myself, you know, or whoever, it's worth the time to just update and take a look at what you have. Same goes for your policies, you know, from your employee handbook. If you haven't updated your employee handbook, you probably don't have a policy on social media, and that's an important thing. It's also a good time to take a look at all your domain names and trade names. Is there anything you need to renew? Are there any trademarks coming up for renewal? Do you have any trade names that need to be filed? It's a good way to check about, you know, what names are you using? Do you have all the domain names you need? So not just what you have, but what you may need. Plan ahead. One issue we forgot to highlight in terms of the big issue was cybersecurity. And it's a major issue. We saw huge attacks last year. But one thing that's interesting is that we've already seen some analysis about what might the likely threats be in 2012. And Cisco has released a document that actually provides some useful tips for steps you might take to minimize your risk to being a victim of cyber attacks in 2012. And you might want to take a look at that document. It's in Cisco's 2011 annual security report, and which actually I've excerpted parts of it on the Internet Law Center's blog, ilccyberreport.wordpress.com. And it's a significant. There's several suggestions. You know, some of them is just simple as you make sure you're updating your passwords regularly. Those are important things you can do all the time. But the other thing is really to take an approach and think about what data do you need to keep, and also monitoring what data gets out, monitoring who has access to data. You know, those are ways you can get a better sense of what risk are exist there. Some of the suggestions from Cisco are know where your data is and understand how and if it is being secured. That's an important point. And knowing where you're exposed is very significant. Implement security measures to help compensate for the lack of control over social networks. Do not underestimate the power of technology controls such as intrusion prevention systems for protecting against network threats. Reputation filtering is also a central tool for detecting suspicious activity and content. So take a look at Cisco's 2011 annual security report. It's a useful tool to go to, and so that's an important thing you should also be considering as we wind down the new year and prepare ahead. Finally, other issues you can think about in the new year include just updating anything that needs updating. I mean, look at all your contracts, look at your policies. Basically, anything that's been on the shelf and gathering dust, take a look at it. this is also a good time to go over your major agreements. If you ever have to do a transaction and in due diligence, you need to attach your material agreements, it's a good time to start updating that stuff so that this is kind of a slow period, and if you ever have to do a transaction quickly, you have that information. So in a little time I have left, I want to thank all of you for joining us these 43 Wednesdays we've had this year. And I also want to thank all our wonderful guests, from our very first guest, Chris Olson, to our last, Mark Randazza. for all their time, effort, dedication, insight, sense of humor, perseverance, and tolerance. And I want to thank Brasco for being such a great producer and for working with me on this. As we had our inaugural year, we're looking forward to having you back in our courtroom every Wednesday next year. We'll be covering all these exciting issues and getting your input on this exciting year that lays ahead with the election coming up. And Brasco, any predictions about Iowa?
Well, if Ron Paul even wins the vote in Iowa, it doesn't mean he's going to become president. I see it's either Mitt Romney will probably be the standout from Iowa.
I think it's interesting, yeah, but I think the key is going to be New Hampshire. You know, Romney has to win big in New Hampshire. So that'll be the turning point. And then it's on to South Carolina. So also best wishes to Gabby Giffords. Happy New Year and hope good luck recovering. And happy holidays to everyone at Renaissance Weekend in South Carolina. Wish we could be there. And a happy New Year to all. Take care. Court adjourned until next year. This is Bennett Kelly with Internet Law Center. Be safe on New Year's. Don't drink and drive. And look forward to having you back in the new year.